Are you ready for that? Did I get you? All right. Hey, good morning. Turn around to somebody and yell good morning at them. All right. Now, stand up. Everybody stand up. We haven't done this for a few weeks at least. Run around and give somebody a fist bump, all right? Just fist. You can blow it up if you really need to, but give somebody a fist bump this morning. Tell them good morning. And then get back to your seats, all right? If you're online, give us a thumbs up, a heart, something like that. You can comment and say, hey, I'm from wherever. If you're listening to this later, like talk to your dog or something. All right, come back to your seats, you guys. Come back to your seats, you crazies. I get you out of your seat and you're done. You're like, I'm out. See ya. He said service was over. Hey, I want to tell you guys, we've been doing this year-long series called Tracking Jesus, but we are also in the middle of, in each month, doing kind of small mini-series, not M-A-N-Y, but M-I-N-I, mini-series. And so this one is 90 Days of Impact, and we're going to be specifically looking at stories where Jesus, like how he chose to live his life and how that made an impact and how maybe you and I could choose to live our lives in a way that actually leaves an eternal impact. And so as a staff, we were brainstorming and thinking, how do we help you guys have kind of a practical way to respond and engage to these sermons? And so we put together this impact guide during the 90 days of impact. And so I want to explain it real quick before I get into the sermon. How this works is as you open it up, there's this blue page that says Find Your Fit. And what we're hoping for you is that throughout this series, you'll take this. There are also more of these blue cards on the communion tables as you go to communion. So if you want more for your family or whatever, but you can look through this, kind of find different ministries that we have as in our church where you can actually get involved and make an impact. And our idea was this. What if we said to you that you could commit without having to commit for like an entire year or your rest of your life? Like some of you were at a church and you volunteered to lead Sunday school once and you did it till you were like 90, all right? So that's not the idea. The idea is, what if you could kind of taste test serving and making a difference in somebody's life? And you could just, for 90 days, commit. And what we're saying is in November, December, and January, so you would sign up for this during this series, and then in November, December, and January, you would serve, and you would get a chance to just see what it's like in that ministry. So if you wanted to help out with Reach, our student ministry, you'd sign up. Robbie, by filling out the blue card, all it does is say, I'm interested in that ministry. Robbie would reach out to you, our student pastor, and he'd talk to you and say, hey, let's talk about what makes you interested in working with teens and how could that work and how could we help you and serve you? And then you would, if that worked out, you guys may at the end of it go, you know what, really, I want to work with children's ministry. That's what I really have a passion for, like fourth and fifth graders. And we would help get you connected with wherever the right ministry is for you. For 90 days, you'd get a chance to serve in that ministry, see what it's like. You'd get some training, all that support, all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the, as we get close to the end of 90 days, somebody would say to you, your leader would say, hey, are you doing all right? Are you enjoying it? Would you care to stay on the team? Would you like to maybe find a different ministry that try out something else? Or do you need to take a break? And all the answers to those questions would be fine. There's no guilt in this. It's just a chance for you to kind of have a no pressure way of tasting and seeing what it's like to actually make an impact in people's lives that could literally have an eternal impact. Part of the reason I preach up here is because there were two Sunday school teachers, Kelly Evans and Don Dibert, in my life who every Sunday I would come and those guys would challenge me, and they didn't get paid to do ministry. They just volunteered and they impacted my life in a dramatic way. And so what if you could have that same kind of impact? So I would invite you to keep this. You can take it home. I will ask you to do this. If you're going to take it and walk out there and throw it away, just leave it on the chair, because our staff, we all put these together, and it took us like an entire day to put, like, you can imagine making all those little cuts and putting, I am a master at these. So if anybody wants to hire me to do the little comb things, I'm a master now. That's what that is. I just wanted to get it out of the way so you guys understood. Feel free, if you get bored during my sermon, to look at it and read it, and then I'll know you're bored, all right? So, all right, here we go. I'm going to pray, and then we'll jump into today's message. Jesus, I love you, and I'm really, really thankful for this church. You know that. You know that it's fun to be in a place where I can have friendships and know people. And I thank you, God, for our spinoffs last week and how amazing they were. I pray for tonight for the spinoff that, God, there would be more people who just get connected and find relationship and find friendships here that could last a lifetime. And Jesus, help us just to be a church that's really seeking you. I want to be a disciple, and I want our church to be filled with disciples, not just churchgoers. Take us deeper, Jesus. It's in your name that I pray. Amen. So have you ever thought about what it takes to be the guy who gets up here and dances around like a monkey every week giving you a TED Talk? Have you ever thought of that? Like, what does it take to do? How many of you think I just make up the sermon on the spot? Does anybody think that out there? All right, there we go. Somebody's being honest. I've had people who are like, you don't make that up. And I was like, no, I don't make it. So I wanted to kind of take you guys behind the scenes if I could pull the curtains back. Most of you know, I start writing these sermons 3 weeks out. So I actually worked on this 3 weeks ago and started working on the sermon. Not only that, but I manuscript. Did you know that? Manuscripting means that I write every single word that I'm going to preach out. So I literally write like a couple chapters to a book every week. And every week it has to be over a different topic and something brand new. And it can't just be like, have you ever read something and you get a couple pages into it and you're like, I get it. And you put the book down. It can't be like that. Because Americans, you need me to hold your attention right here, you know, and you, like, if I don't have your attention, you're on your phone, and I've got all this distraction to try to fight against, and so I have to work very hard at that. But then you might think, well, Kent, but don't you just really work that 1 hour on Sunday mornings where you get up and you preach it? And I wish that was true, but I actually, when I preach this sermon, this sermon, it started 3 weeks ago, and then last night was when I pulled it out of the vault again, and I started working on it. So typically, it's about 5 or 6 at night. Last night, I was trying to help clean up around the house a little bit, so it's about 7 or 8 at night. And I pull out this sermon, and I start to go through it, and I take that manuscripted version, and what I do is I go through it, and I make it, it has to fit on 2 pages. And so I cut stuff out, and I take paragraphs, and I make them into notes, and I do all this stuff so that I can, did you know I have these notes in my, I just have them in my Bible. Probably none of you think I'm reading out of my Bible. I'm reading them off the notes, because that way I don't have to flip my Bible and find it. It's in my notes. It's right there. And I do all that work, and then Saturday night, how many of you last night were staying up late, party, like discoing and stuff until late in the, none of you disco anymore? What's wrong with y'all? I don't know what people do on Saturday nights because I haven't done it in 20 years, all right? I don't know what you do on Saturday nights because what I do is I go to sleep like you go to sleep on Sunday night, right? And if you invite me out, I'll be like, oh, I really wish I could, but it's after 5. I'm an old person now, and I can't stay out. If it's after 5, I can't do it on Saturdays. And so here I am. I work on that all night. Once I pulled it out, it's in my brain, and I'm running through it. I literally, almost every Saturday night, have to take a Tylenol PM. Now, I'm not addicted to them. I just take it because I can't get my brain to stop. Last night at 3 a.m, our security alarm goes off and it said there was a burglar. So I'm in my underwear grabbing a bat and with my flashlight and I'm walking through the house and I find out that there's just one of our window alarms had messed up and there wasn't anybody in the house. But guess what? I didn't sleep the rest of the night. Like I finally dozed off and then I had a dream that I'd missed my sermon's preaching time. And all of that's happening in the morning. And so then I get up early. And I come to the church, and I take this sermon. I've got whatever has happened the night before. I've got it with me, and I'm carrying it all. And I go to my office, and if you're ever here early in the morning and you hear me screaming in my office, it's because I'm preaching to the computer screen. And I actually preach this before I get up to you all and preach. And if I don't preach, if it doesn't come out good the first time, I preach it again. And if it doesn't come out good, I preach it again. And sometimes I'll go back to a section, I'll just keep preaching it until it sounds right, until I feel like it's what will hit your heart and will be something that you can take home with you. And then I have to get up and I'm standing behind this curtain over here. You guys ever see me come out? We need some come out music like John, you know, remember Johnny Carson or like the late show, like I come out and I come out. But what you don't know is I'm standing back there like sick to my stomach, nervous because every single week I get nervous to come out and speak to you guys because it's such a big responsibility to take God's word. And I know that there's a potential. Like, I hope you know this about me. I know that there's a potential. You've invited somebody who doesn't know Jesus and this may be their one shot. And I am back there, nervous as all get out. And the moment I step on stage, it all clicks. But before that, I'm back there. I'm going, what am I supposed to start with? What do I say? Like over there, I was like reading with my phone. Like, okay, oh yeah, I got to do that. You guys are all worshiping. And I'm over there like trying to keep my heart in that place, but it's hard. And I come out. And the moment I step out on stage, I'm good. And then I preach it. And then guess what happens? I have to preach it again for you all. I preached it for first service already once. Have you ever thought about that? I've already done this. This is my really now like third or fourth run through this sermon. And I have to come to you all with the same like vigor, the same excitement, the same energy, the same power, the same depth that I came to every other performance. It's not really a performance, but every other time that I've done this, it has to be good. It has to hit. And I'm telling you, every single Sunday, the same exact thing happens to me. Every single week, I get done. And what you don't even know is after service and in between services, I'm shaking hands and I'm talking to people and somebody will come and they'll like drop a bomb like, hey, my wife and I are getting divorced on me like in between. And I'll be like, ah, okay. Or like sometimes I've had people come up and tell me like, hey, that sermon wasn't very good. I'm like, ah, okay, thanks. And I have to like get up and still preach it in the back of my mind thinking somebody like, is this a stinker? Like, am I just wasting everybody's time? And I have to do all that and I have to bring it up here and I get it to you guys and I get to the end of all that. I've shaken everybody's hand. And I go home, and I have what I call the holy hangover. You ever had a hangover before? Come on, like, raise your hand if you've had a hangover. Raise your hand. Come on, I know the truth. I have. You have. Most of you have probably. It is that same feeling, but it's because I have just exhausted. I've just left it all on this stage and in this church. Now I'm just exhausted. I don't have another ounce of energy. I'm emotionally drained. I'm mentally drained. I'm physically drained. But I'm so amped up on adrenaline that I can't go back to sleep. And I just lay in my bed. And I'm just being honest with you. I lay in my bed and I think I invented the word binge Netflix. Like I just binge Netflix and I just sit there and I try to just let my soul decompress a little bit. And that is my Sunday. And then every Monday, I get up and it all starts over again. Anybody have a life like that? Like, I know maybe you like that is a totally unique thing to preachers, but you have stuff in your world that just drains you, don't you? You have that customer or that client who like is like an endless barrage of silly questions, right? You've heard that there's no stupid question, and you're like, no, this person found all of them and they asked them, right? And they ask you stupid questions, and you have to be kind and nice, and you're like, yes, I will answer that for the 40th time, and you answer it, or maybe you have that boss that is like adamant about having meetings, and the meetings are meaningless, and you're like, you could have just emailed this to us all, and instead you have to sit through it, and you like got your phone under your desk, and you're thumbing through, and you're just waiting for it to get over, because it just drains you. Or maybe you have that coworker that comes to your office and they're like, well, the doctor put me on another medication. And you're like, oh, please, maybe you need to go see the doctor now. Like, you just can't, like, and they do, and I just, and all you hear is that droning and you're like, oh, please. And like, we all have stuff in our life. I don't care if it's this thing that's done in front of a bunch of people or if it's something that just happens in the quiet of your life. You have stuff. It takes it out of you, that wears you out, that empties your cup, right? You have stuff that empties your cup. Here's the question I want us to deal with today. The question is this: how do you keep your tank from getting empty when you're constantly pouring out like that? Like some of you are so crazy busy. Like some of you, I hear about your schedules and just hearing your schedule gives me anxiety. You know, it's like, oh, how do you do that? I don't know. And your lives are just so chaotic and crazy. And some of you are in a totally different space in life. You're retired and your life isn't chaotic, but you still are pouring out for your kids and your mom and your dad. And you're like, your life is at a different stage of pouring out and you're still just as exhausted because you have less energy to give. And but now it's getting taken in different ways. How do you personally, I want you to think in your mind, what do you do to cope with that? What do you do to deal with that stress? Because I will promise you this, you have something that you cope with. And my hope is today that I could maybe give you, by the end of this, you'll have come around to some different ideas, some different things that you could use to actually deal with that level of stress and that level of pouring out. See, we're going to look at Jesus' life because if you haven't figured it out yet, like he's kind of a big deal. And not just he's kind of a big deal, but like he knew how to do life. And so Jesus, what I want you to know about Jesus is that Jesus encountered severe scenarios as well. And they drained him, but still he was able to keep giving. And so as we think about this, I want to ask the question, what gives? What was different about his rhythm of life, about who he was, that allowed him to keep giving, even in scenarios where they were severe and they were draining and they would take everything out of him? Don't you want to know that? Don't you want to figure out what that is and put it into your own life and change the way, the rhythm that you live by, the chaos that you live by, and how much it controls every decision you make? Oh, I know I want it. And so I want to ask this question, what gives with Jesus? Now, I need to say, because some of you are out there, you're Bible scholars, you're like, I'm probably the smartest Bible person in this room, Kent. And you're thinking, well, Kent, he was God, right? Like, if you're a theologian, you know that what Christianity, what we ascribe to, is that Jesus was fully God and he was fully, does anybody know the other part? Human or man, right? He was fully God and fully man, fully human. That Jesus embraced those two things that shouldn't go together. He forced them together. What that means, if you're new to Christianity, is that Christians believe God actually came to this earth, did the thing all of you have always prayed for. God, if you're there, why don't you just come down here? And he did it. He came down to earth for you and for me, but he just didn't do it at a time where you live, right? And he came down and he put himself in this body, and he actually understands what it's like to be tempted in every way that you've ever been tempted, except he goes through it without ever sinning. Incredible. Incredible. He actually will go, I don't want to ruin the end of the story for you, but he will go to his death eventually, not because he needs to die, but because he wants to redeem you and I from the curse of death. And he will die himself to save all of us. And it's just like this simple thing that I just have to identify with. I have to just believe it and give my heart to it. And he gives you this new life. So is it because he's just God? Well, I would argue that it's not. Because Jesus understands what it's like to be tired, don't you know? Jesus understands what it's like to have everything in life hit you and you just want to run away from it and grieve. There's a point when he did that. He got in a boat with his buddies, just wanted to get away. Jesus knows what it's like to get agitated and upset and frustrated. Do you know, one of my favorite passages in the Bible is Jesus is talking with his disciples, and they again make kind of a dumb statement. And Jesus goes, are you still so dull? Like, it's one of my, look it up. I think it's in Mark. I could be wrong, but it's one of my favorites because, like, Jesus gets tired of them being dummies. He's like, you big dummy, right? And he's like, he's just like, are you dull? Like, you don't get it yet? And they have these, Jesus, did you know this? Jesus sweat. Did you know that? He had stinky armpits, like 99% sure, really stinky armpits because they hadn't invented deodorant. Like, have you ever thought about that? He was fully human. He knew what it was like. He knows what it's like to experience what you experience. And so it's unfair for us to say, well, he was God. He wouldn't have had to struggle like I struggle with these kinds of things. No, 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 no. He got tired. He got worn out. He experienced life like you experience it. So let me take you into one of these moments, okay? So in a moment, we're going to be in section 35 of the Harmonies of the Gospel. You can get this from our website. If you go to harmonychurch.cc, there's a big picture of Jesus. It says Tracking Jesus. If you click on it, it will take you into this experience that we've created for you to walk alongside of these sermons. And so you can literally go to section 35. One of the neat things that I did this week, I'm not promising to do it every week, is there is a link under section 35 that says side-by-side comparison. And I literally took the three gospels that tell this story and I showed you like where the paragraphs meet up. And so sometimes like these paragraphs meet up here, but this one is clear down here because that Matthew maybe doesn't tell that part of the story. And so you can actually visually see where they line up and where they don't. So that's just something for you to get on. I will try to do that. I can't promise I'll do it every week, but I'm going to try to. That's just a plug for the harmonies. Let me give you the setup for the story, all right? Jesus has called Andrew and Peter and James and John to be his disciples. And now he's in the city of Capernaum. And he's in Capernaum, and he's at the synagogue because it's Saturday, because Jews celebrate the Sabbath on Saturday. That's actually, the Sabbath is Saturday. That's where Christians think it's Sunday. It's really not. It's always been Saturday. And so Saturday, for the Jewish people, Friday night is when they start the Sabbath. They believe days end and start on sundown. And so Friday night, the Sabbath begins. The next morning, on Saturday morning, they have what they call synagogue. It's actually why Christians meet on Sunday mornings, is because Jesus rose from the dead and we adopted the synagogue model. So similar to a church. and they're meeting on Saturday morning, and Jesus is at the synagogue on Saturday morning, and he's there, and this guy comes in. And this guy, I'm sure everybody in town knew who he was, because I'm going to call him Frank, because Frank was demon-possessed. Hasn't anybody ever met somebody who was demon-possessed? It's okay if you haven't. Okay, so maybe a couple of you. Like, most Americans would be like, oh, I don't believe in that, can't, right? It's all right. I'm not. That's not my point of my sermon. I worked in a youth center where there was a Christian counselor next door to me. And he came running into my office, and he was like, I need you to pray. And I was like, okay, what's going on? And he said, this woman's coming, and she says she's demon-possessed, and I have to counsel her. And I was like, okay. And so he goes back to his office, and a few minutes later, I hear them talking, and then all of a sudden, through these like paper-thin walls, I hear, oh, blah, blah. And I was like, dear Jesus, please just get the demon out of the building, right? Like, I didn't meet the lady. I just was like, freaking out, like I'm curled up in a fetal position while this guy is dealing with the demon over here. I don't know. I don't know what you do with that. I just know that was the real experience of my life. And here is Jesus in this church, and I don't know that it's like, blah, blah. I do know that this demon knows things about Jesus. It starts to say things about Jesus. And Jesus stops it, and he has it be quiet, and he tells it to come out of the man. And the demon leaves. And the scriptures don't tell us what happens in that, like what all exactly happened after that. Sometimes I wish there was a little more detail, but that wasn't the point of their stories. But could you imagine? I just want you for a moment to put yourselves in their shoes. You showed up at church, it's morning like this, and somebody walks in the room and they start, Jesus, you're a son. You're like, ah, Frank's at it again, right? And like, you're freaking out. And then Jesus stands up and he goes, stop it and come out of him. And Frank goes still. I just want, like, these are real historical stories. I want you to feel it. What happens after that? You know what I think happens is everybody in the church stops listening, in the synagogue stops listening to the rabbi up there teaching. I think they all stand up and the rabbi's like, hey, everybody, hold on. Don't, Frank, I know. But everybody goes back to Frank. What is, man, is this real? And Frank's like, I don't know what happened, right? And he starts relaying his experience. One minute I was speaking, I couldn't control myself. And then the next minute, like my mind felt this peace it has never felt in my entirety of life. People are gathering around Jesus. What did you do? I've never seen something like that, right? Like you can feel the pressure of the moment. Can you feel the anxiety for Jesus of this demon getting up and I don't know if you know it. It's not good press to have demons be the ones who are telling everybody who you are, all right? This is why Jesus always tells demons to be quiet when they're the ones who are telling who he is. He doesn't want their press. He doesn't want to be associated with them. He wants to cast them out. And so here, maybe someday we'll talk more about that. But here is Jesus, and he casts it out. And I don't know about you, but for me, my body in that moment has adrenaline shoot into it. Right? Stop it. Maybe even when I yell like that, some of you have adrenaline like, oh, I can't, please don't yell anymore, right? And Jesus, he had to have had, this is the stuff I wish we knew. Like, it'll be fun to ask him, tell me what that was like. Frank healed, everybody's ended. And then we go to Mark, and I want you to listen to what Mark says after this happens. We're going to kind of bounce back and forth between several of the Gospels. Mark says this in Mark 1:29. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the house of Simon and Andrew. Now, Simon and Andrew, Simon is also Peter, same person. They live in Capernaum. Capernaum is, if you had the Sea of Galilee, it's kind of like a big potato. Right? I don't know, I've never heard it described as a potato, but it's a big potato, all right? And Capernaum is at the northern side of the potato, all right? It's up here at the top, and it's just this beautiful fishing village. When I was in Israel, I actually was there, and I was like, I've got to swim at Capernaum. So I jumped in the water and swam because it was beautiful, and like just this gorgeous place, and it's this little tiny village. I mean, it's not huge. It's not a city like you would think of. It's more like picture Sadieville or something like that, all right? So tiny. You could walk the whole thing if you wanted to. And here is Jesus. He's at the synagogue, and for those of you who are going to Israel, when you're in Israel, we'll stand in the location of the synagogue, and like 40 yards away, archaeologists have found Peter's house. And you literally can go and stand in the place where Jesus would have been in Peter's house. They have walked the 40 yards to Peter's house. And here they are, they walk inside, and you can picture them talking as they're walking down the roads, and Jesus, that was crazy. You just cast Frank's demon out. And like, we've known him since we were little boys, and this is that's their synagogue, right? And they go to Peter's house, and I want you to listen to what happens. Verse 38 of Luke chapter 4. So we're going to jump over to Luke now. Now, Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked Jesus to help her. You remember, like, you just put yourself in his shoes, right? You just experienced the adrenaline rush of it. You just felt the pressure of all these people and people talking to you and asking you questions. Like, and Jesus is going home. He's thinking, oh, I finally get to rest a little. He's got to be thinking that, right? But what does he get home to? Well, if you could, my mom is sick. Could you heal her too? And I was thinking about this because I picture Peter's wife being like, Jesus, could you heal my mom? She's sick. And I picture Peter being like, teacher, come here, right? He's like, look, if you heal her, she's going to want to take family pictures. You're going to have to be in it. Like, if you just wait, like, I don't know if that's true, but like, that's how I kind of picture it going. And listen to what happens with Jesus. I love this. It says in verse 39 of Luke chapter 4, so he bent over her and he rebuked the fever. Can you picture Jesus? Just this woman, she's a little bit older in age, and he leans over and he goes, fever, skedaddle. And just, she stops sweating and she's like, I feel really good. Like, right? And like, I don't even know how to like act out that scene because it's so outside of our own realm of experience. I want you to listen to what happens. Fever left her. She got up at once and began to wait on them. I always bothered me as a kid that this woman had a fever, and then does it bother anybody else? And then right away she had to get up and work. I was like, come on, man, somebody give that lady a break. But as I got older, I started to think Sabbath, if you don't know it, Sabbath is actually like a weekly holiday for the Jewish people. I honestly, after experiencing it in Israel, I was like, I wish we had something like this in America. Because everything shuts down, and on Friday night, they have this dinner, and literally in the hotel, there's like groups of teenagers in circles, and they're like, have their arms around each other, and they're like, oh, I love it, and they're like dancing. So I was like, this is fun, man. Everybody's sitting back, like you sit back in your chair, you drink some wine, it starts out with prayers, and like, it just was this beautiful event of like celebrating this fact of the Jewish people just saying, you know what, for 24 hours, we can experience life without us having to be in control. And they have this, right? And then at the end of the Sabbath, so Saturday night before sundown occurs, they have another meal. And I think this is why this woman is getting up, is because that other meal is coming. And this is another celebration. And this is the celebration of the end of Sabbath. You get to go back to work and you get to go shopping if you want and you go do whatever. We're in Israel. Literally, some of our guys leave at that evening, Saturday evening, and they go down to the Orthodox Jewish quarter. This, you know, have you ever seen the guys with the curls on their side of their heads? With the big hats on. That's the Jewish Orthodox faith. And you go down there, and they said when you were walking through the streets, it was just like a party. Like everybody was out of their house. Everybody was hanging out together, and they're talking, and they're enjoying each other. Why? Because the Sabbath's over, and now they don't have to stay in their house and stay a certain distance from home. They can be together, and they can enjoy, and they can go out and work and do all these things. And it's this beautiful party. And as I've gotten older, I've pictured this different. I don't think it's that they forced her to work. Think if you had somebody really famous at your house. Wouldn't you want to get up? Like if you had been sick for days, you want to get up and like take care of them and make sure that they had everything. Like that your party was the party they would remember forever. And I think that's what this mother-in-law is doing. I know my mother-in-law, one time I was there for Thanksgiving and she ran out of pot holders. She went back in this room, and I was like, where are you going, Sue? And she's like, I ran out of pot holders. I don't know what I'm going to do. She came back like 15 minutes with two pot holders, and I was like, you found some pot holders. She was like, no, I crocheted them. And I was like, you know, what? Like, you know, why? She wouldn't have done that if you hadn't had the whole family there. She did it because you know as well as I do, like hospitality really matters. And so this woman gives everything. And now it's evening. Now, this next part that I'm going to read to you, it didn't stick out to me until I started studying this with all three Gospels and thinking about it in the timeline. I'd never tied that it was Sabbath evening, and I'd never been to Israel to experience a Sabbath. And so here I am, I've experienced that, and I'm reading this, and it hits me. All three Gospels that record this story talk about that it's after evening when everybody comes to Jesus. Why is it after evening? Because it was the Sabbath. They couldn't come to him until after the evening, until the sun goes down. So listen, This is from Mark again. We're going to jump back to Mark. Mark 1, 32 through 33. That evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. All the sick and demon-possessed. Can you picture it? So the story has gone around about Frank, right? Everybody's heard about Frank. And so they're like, honey, do you think he could help you with that farm accident that you had with your hand? I don't know. It's worth a try. I have this terrible headache. It never will leave me. I can't do anything. I can't do anything. I wonder if he could do something for me. Or a child. She falls down all the time, and something's not right. I wonder, maybe he could do something. And so that evening, everybody comes, but they're sick and the demon-possessed. Verse 33, the whole town gathered at their door. Can you imagine the whole town gathering at your door? And Jesus healed many with various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. And again, Jesus, for the third time this day, is called upon, and not just like a little bit, he's called upon at the end of his day when he should be going to bed. He's called upon to give it all. Everybody. And I don't picture him walking around being like, you're healed, you're healed, you're healed, you're healed. All right, I'm out, folks, right? Do you picture it? I picture it being like he's actually talking and engaging. And I'll tell you, as a pastor, one of the hardest practices that I have is when I'm talking to one person and I'm talking to them about something and there's another person standing right behind them that I know wants to talk to me, to be focused and engaged on the person that's in front of me, right? I don't picture Jesus ever doing that wrong. I picture him giving his full attention to who he's talking to. So here is Jesus. He's giving himself away. He's pouring out. He's pouring out. And I don't know about you, but to me, I'm thinking third time in the day, and he's at the end. He's given it all. I think Jesus has to be tired. Don't you? Jesus has to be tired. But still, he pours himself out. He still pours himself out. So what was it? Let me ask you this question. What was it about Jesus that made him different? What was it that made him different than you and me? Because if you're me, could I just be really blatantly honest with you guys? I would rather give my money away than my time away. Can I get an amen to that? Anybody? Like, all right. Like, I don't know what it is about our culture today. That used to not be the case, but now it's easier for me to give my money than my time. That's just the reality of life. But I want to tell you something. Jesus was available, and he was able to make room for ministry, right? Like, it's different than what you and I have experienced. What Jesus was he was available. Like, when the opportunity for ministry came, he was available for it, and he was able. Like, he kind of knew how to engage with it and what to do. So what is it that makes him different? Because here I am, the person who would rather give you my money than my time. I would rather, if I could, when I have free time, to binge Netflix, I'd rather go to another, like, thing of Oreos, right? Like, I'd rather do something other than have to give my time away. But here's the problem. The problem is this. That's not the way of the kingdom. The way of the kingdom is not give more money and don't give your time. The kingdom does involve, like, us giving away our whole selves. But the way of the kingdom is not to be so full that you can't give yourself away to the right kinds of things, right? The way of the kingdom is that you shouldn't be so full, being just driven from place to place and thing to thing, that you can't give yourself away to the right kinds of things. But my guess is, American, that what I've described is your life to a T. You're so full of all the stuff that's grabbing you and pulling you in whatever direction it wants you to go, that you don't know what to do. So could I just real quickly give you a couple things? I want to just give you two things, two powerful pursuits of an intentional life, all right? Because I think what this takes is, if you want to be available and able, I think it takes you becoming intentional about your life. Would you agree with that? Like, I have to actually, I can't just let things pull me in different directions. I have to become intentional. So I want to give you these two powerful pursuits of an intentional life. I would encourage you, maybe take a picture of this, write it down if you want to, but hope, and then think about these things. Really think about it. Number one is this. This is a powerful pursuit that if you put it in your life, it will help bring intentionality to your life. Living life in light of your higher purpose. You live life in light of your higher purpose. What if you woke up in the morning knowing why God created you and what he wants you to do? What if you had a sense of that instead of, well, I want to be successful so people think I'm really great, or I want to make a lot of money, or I want people to like me, or I just got to get my kids to another thing because I got to keep my kids busy, because if they're not busy, then they'll get involved in something they shouldn't. What if you changed your whole mindset and you got involved with a higher purpose? I'm telling you, Jesus knew what he was here on this earth for, and he lived it. He lived it. What about you? Do you have a sense of the higher purpose, the higher calling that's for you? I'll tell you, I have a sense of what I think God wants me to do with my life the rest of my days. And it is not be a really great pastor. Sorry for you suckers. You're all like, oh, somebody better fire him. No, you know what I think my purpose is? I think my purpose is not to be a great leader necessarily, but to raise up and release leaders for the kingdom of God. That's why I hope that you see that there's something a little different from my preaching. And the difference is, I don't want y'all just to sit on your booties out there. I want you to become leaders for the kingdom, for you to be world changers who make a difference in the organization, because I will never sit in the office probably that you sit in. I will never stand toe-to-toe with the people that you stand toe-to-toe with. Now, but guess who will? You will. So what if you became this leader who was like, I want to advance God's kingdom. If you don't have a purpose, start there. Start with, I want to advance God's kingdom. And in our mission statement, we haven't have it written out for you. I'm going to live for God. That's a big statement. I'm going to live for God. What does it look like for you to live for God? Start to think about that. I'm not going to tell you everything. I want you to be a leader. Start to think about it. And then I'm going to love people. What would it look like for you to love the people that God has placed around you? What if you just started taking just that and living it out? I'm telling you, Jesus knew his purpose and he lived it. He lived it. It's why Jesus didn't say yes to everything that came along to him. You know, there were times where he would go off and pray and he would come back and say, well, boys, we need to leave. We got to go other places and preach the kingdom there too. And they would go somewhere else. There are other times where he stuck around. There are some times where I'm convinced that Jesus went and did things just because there was one person for him to reach. The demoniac, we'll talk about that at some point in the series. I think he went just because of that guy. That's it. That's it. Because he knew who he was and what he was doing. Is your schedule free enough to do something just for one person? To get to that level of intentionality, you have to live in light of your higher purpose. The second one is this. You need to squarely place your hope on God as your sustainer. You need to squarely place your hope on God as your sustainer. Kill all the imposters. And can I just put a little asterisk on this? Please do not go kill anybody, all right? Like, just in case you're a real literalist out there, I mean, kill the things that take the place of God in your life, all right? So I don't want any murders out of this place, all right? Online people, are you listening to me? All right. Squarely place your hope on God as your sustainer. Well, could I ask you a question? I know I ask a lot of questions in my sermons, but what is your sustainer? What is the thing that sustains you when life is hard? What sustains you when things aren't going right? What sustains you when you get the news that you wish you'd have never heard? What sustains you when you're mourning? What sustains you when everything falls apart? What is it? What do you run to? I'll be honest with you. I run to binging Netflix, and I run to eating a sleeve of Oreos and half a gallon of milk. Just the reality of it. That's what I run to. And I am struggling through this. I'm working through this. You should be working through this. I look at it and I go, those are imposters. They do not fix my problem. Do they fix your problem? Or does it just give you more problems? That's the reality of it, right? And some of you are like, I could tell you ate a sleeve of Oreos, can't. Some of you, your thing is your body. Some of you, you want your body to be perfect, and if an eyelash is out of place, you don't feel like you can go out, and nothing is right about you. If this muscle is, smaller than this muscle, and, I don't look good, so your looks become your God. I can promise you this. Talk to any 80-year-old, and they'll say, well, you better not trust that, right? Because, eventually, everything starts to sag. You can't keep it all up forever, folks. That God, that imposter will die. What is it for you? Some of you, I have to be careful because I think there's some kids in here, but some of you, the thing that you run to for a sustainment in your life is you look at pictures of somebody who's not your wife. And you do stuff that probably makes you feel a lot of shame and guilt. And you're running to it because it feels like in the moment it sustains you. But it doesn't. It kills you. It crushes you. Do you get the picture? Some of you, it's a glass of bourbon that turns into two, that turns into three, that turns into half the bottle. Some of you, it's drugs. I mean, I could just keep going. Some of you, it's your success, and you work long hours, and you never come home. And so it could be anything. There are imposters everywhere that take the place of God. The question is not what are all the imposters that I could list. The question is, what do you run to instead of God? I had a young man in my youth group years ago who smoked a lot of pot. And he said, Ken, I don't get why smoking pot's all wrong. And I was like, well, can I ask you a question, Nick? And he was like, sure. I said, tell me the truth. You just smoke pot because it helps you escape your problems, right? He was like, yeah. I was like, you're just looking for a savior, man. It's really what you're looking for is a savior. And pot isn't it. It's never going to fulfill you. You're gonna smoke the dope. You're gonna be out of it for a little while, and then you're gonna come back, and you're gonna have all the same problems, and maybe even more. What is the imposter in your life? Can I real quickly just read a passage from Psalm 3, 4 through 6? Listen to King David speak about his relationship to God. He says this: I call out to the Lord, and he answers me from his holy mountain. I lie down and sleep. Some of you are like, oh, I wish I could lay down and sleep. I can't ever sleep. I lie down and sleep. I wake again, and I want you to listen to why he says he wakes. Because the Lord sustains me. I wake up because God sustains me. He says, I will not fear though tens of thousands assail me on every side. And it's easy for you to sit there and go, yeah, but he was a king, Kent. He had anything he wanted, anytime he wanted. What you may not know is the reason why he says, though tens of thousands assail me on every side, is because his own son, his own flesh and blood, was hunting him down to kill him, to take his life. And here he is saying, I call out to God, and he replies to me from his holy mountain. I lay down to sleep, and I know that when I wake up, why? Because God sustains me. He is my everything. Jesus said the same kind of thing. He said, after he had fasted for 40 days, he said this, he said that it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. So could I just ask you, what is it that's your imposter sustainer? Are you willing to kill it? This is part of the Christian life, is that we die to ourselves and we are raised to new life through the grace of Jesus, to a new and different and better way. There is a better way. His name is Jesus. I was out to eat the other day with an older gentleman in our congregation. At the end of our conversation, he said, you know, Kent, he said, stuff in life just doesn't matter to me anymore. So I just don't really care. He's at a point in life where, like, the days are shorter and shorter, and years are shorter and shorter, and less. And so it just doesn't matter anymore. He said, you know, I feel like at my age, if I can love God really well, and I can love my family really well, then I'm doing what I need to be doing. What about you? I know all of us want to be people of impact, right? We're doing this 90 days of impact because I think people want that. We want to have a story that resonates. If I were to ask you 100 years from now, will your life have had an impact because you stayed and worked a little longer? If I asked you 100 years from now, do you think your life had an impact because you ran your kids ragged going to every single event that they possibly could be involved in? Do you think if I asked you, will your life have had a huge impact because of the amount of money that you made? I don't know. You know what I do know makes the impact? What I know is that makes the impact is people who give their life away to other people, who pour themselves out. That's why I think Jesus was intentional about the kind of pursuits he went after in his life. What about you? What are you going to be intentional about? Listen, in a moment, we're going to go to communion, and some of you need to just go to those tables, and you need to just kind of fall on your face before God and say, I just need you again. I need to recommit my life to you. I need you, Jesus. I need your blood. I need your body. I need your life in me. I want to be a person of impact, and I'm going to pursue something different with my life. Some of you, good night, you need to come up here. There's going to be folks around the front, and you need to just come up and say, I'm just done. I need to give everything away to Jesus. I'm done with it. I want him to be my Savior. I want him to be the one who sustains me. I'm ready for a new way of life. Come and talk to us. Like, you don't have to stay where you're at. That's the secret nobody tells you. You don't have to stay where you're at. Life can change in a moment. Jesus said you can be born again. Like, you can start all over, and he'll give you a fresh slate. And this time when you walk with him. I remember the day that I did that, and my whole life changed. Because here's what I know. Jeremiah says it this way. He says that when you seek the Lord with all your heart, he'll be found. Some of you are like, oh, I've tried that before, Ken. It didn't work. Well, that's because you didn't do it with all your heart. You know how to do stuff with all your heart? Can I tell you how to do that? You already know this, because if you've ever dated a person, you gave them all your, especially when you're a teenager, you were like, oh, I love you. I can't stop thinking about you. When I was a kid, I don't think kids do this anymore, but people would fall asleep. I remember a roommate who would have his phone. Do you remember this? And they would be on the phone together, and they'd be like, you hang up. No, you hang up, right? No, you hang up. What if you did that with God? What if, like, you just became madly in love with him? I'm convinced the more that I read the scripture, the more that that's all he was ever longing for. Adam and Eve broke off the relationship, and since that point, God has just been coming after. Come back to me, come back to me, come back to me. He is today calling to you, come back to me. What if today was your day? Whenever you guys are ready, you can stand up, go partake of communion. We'll be singing a song. I'd encourage you to listen to the lyrics and let it really impact you. Don't miss this moment to do something with Jesus. You guys stand with us. Let's sing.